Blog Talk Radio. Now in its second edition, Carol Dean's popular book, The Art of Film Funding, has 12 new chapters to cover all areas of film financing and how to avoid expensive pitfalls. Learn how to start with an idea and end with a trailer. How to make an ask for money. Create your story structure and your trailer. Legal advice, fair use, successful crowdfunding, how to ask for music rights, and what insurance you can't shoot without. Available on Amazon under Carol Dean and at FromTheHeartProductions.com.
Welcome to The Art of Film Funding. I'm your host, Claire Papin, along with Carol Dean, our other host, author of the best-selling book, The Art of Film Funding. Carol is also the founder and president of From the Heart Productions and the host of this show. Internationally renowned speaker and story consultant Fernanda Rossi is our guest today. She's the author of Trailer Mechanics, How to Make Your Documentary Fundraising Demo. Fernanda has doctored more than 300 fiction scripts, fundraising samples, and documentaries, including two nominated for the Academy Award and many that went on to receive funds from ITVS and NEH in the U.S. and NFB in Canada. Carol, Fernanda is a donor to the Roy Dean Film Grants, right?
Oh, yes. She's a generous donor. She gives to two of our grants. And Fernanda, you know, I remember going to see you in New York. I'm sure it was your first seminar. And I just found your information to be brilliant. And fast forward to 2012, and here you are. Everybody knows how smart you are. So we're really proud to have you on the show, and I want to tell you how much I love your second edition of Trailer Mechanics.
Oh, thank you, Carol. You're so, so nice. I should call you every day to get a little boost in the morning when I wake up. Yes, you met me like right out of the egg when I hatched as a consultant. I remember it was downtown, and it was my first seminar on story structure, and you were there, and I knew about your grant. I was a bit nervous that you were there, thinking, oh my God, this woman is too important, her opinion will matter. And you approached me and said, I love that. And yeah, the workshop has grown. Not only it traveled all over the States, it also traveled the world, and obviously expanded in contact as I gained more experience and knowledge. But yeah, it was a 12-year journey since that day in June. I remember it was June. And yeah, the trailer was a consequence. I started working on story structure with people, and then at that time, grants and foundations started to ask for a demo of sorts, and nobody knew exactly what they meant by that, and the information was a bit fuzzy. So because I was teaching story structure, it seemed a logical consequence of it, that I would know how to put this thing together. And I started to call foundations, and I wrote my first edition, for which I interview you. And then, you know, the second edition came with the time and experience that was between the first and the second. So, yeah, between the first and second edition, there were several years, but it really benefited. The second edition is much heavier. It's double the length. And it has interviews to 25 people in the industry, but most importantly has the experience of having done this over and over and over until you can spot the mistakes from miles away. So, yeah, I'm very happy. It was a huge undertaking to rewrite the book. It's almost a different book. I even thought of changing the name, actually, because it's such a different book from the first edition. But, yeah, I'm happy. I'm glad that you liked it.
Oh, I do. I think it's the Bible. But let's start out with, what does a story consultant do?
Oh, I think sometimes they don't do anything. I think nobody should hire a story consultant. I hate the name. Somebody gave it to me when I started, and I said, oh, I guess that's what I do. And very naively, I went ahead with it. And, oh, gosh, I have so many issues with it. I think first and foremost, when I started doing it, consulting was done by friends. You would call your friends, show your film, and have a chat over coffee. And what I did was basically create a methodology to systematize it. and create a method around it. I have a background in semiotics, so the analysis of work of any shape or form wasn't foreign to me. And yes, one can have a chat over coffee, but a completely different thing is to analyze something with a purpose and within a frame of reference. So unfortunately, those things became very blurry, and people call story consultant pretty much anything. If, you know, your husband or your best friend gives you advice, oh, well, that's the story consultant. So it's been so degraded, and I think the economy hasn't helped. Everybody who's out of work thinks that it's easy to start a consulting practice. So they put up a website overnight, and they start charging for watching films and saying what they think, which I think is valid. You know, it's great to have opinions from people, but personally, I don't charge for my opinion. My opinion goes for free. The work I do is very involved. It takes several days, and it has several follow-ups. And again, it's done within a frame, and I have a background for that. I studied semiotics on top of film. So it doesn't come, you know, I'm not a curator. I haven't watched tons of films, and therefore I know what the market wants, which, again, is a valid way to consult. If somebody is a festival director and they want to, you know, moonlight as consultant, that's a valid opinion that a filmmaker should have. I would pay a festival director to tell me what they think, because that opinion represents the opinion of many festival directors. But that's different from the coaching or facilitation I do, which is more like a therapy session where you really dig deep to understand how does the film work, what do I need to change, why do I want to change it, why did I make these decisions. So consulting is everything, and I'm in a very narrow margin that has to do with coaching, midwifery, therapy, structure analysis, and those things. And think consulting doesn't do justice to what I do. That's why I don't like the name in my case, and that's why the name became so popular lately. Anybody, you know, offers the service without specifying what they do exactly. And I think it's important for people to know the difference. I think filmmakers should hire these consultants, I'm drawing quotation marks in the air, and get the opinion of key people in the business, because they need to know that in advance. Better find it out in a private session than when you get your rejection letter from a festival. And another thing is to do the midwifery work I do. I help birth the project with very specific information. So I keep the title story consultant, but God, if you come up with another name, I will take it.
Okay. Well, let's just talk about what the benefits are when filmmakers come to you and they're confused. They have what? They have a trailer and they have a footage that's been shot, but they're and they think it's a good trailer. Is that when they come to you?
Yeah, most people, I mean, people come to me at different stages. I'm more known for the demo trailer work because I wrote the book on it, and that's what I get hired to lecture about the most, because is what markets, you know, a film market or a film festival, we have more audiences for that type of topic. But my specialty is story structure. Now, if it takes the shape of a synopsis or a demo or a rough cut or a script, it's irrelevant to me, at least. It's relevant for the filmmaker. But for me, it's the same work. It's just different shape. So people contact me. Sometimes they contact me with an idea, and I said, how do I story develop this? Some people contact me with a shooting list for a demo, or with a demo that they thought it was right, but everybody said, I don't get it. And sometimes people call me when they have 200 hours of footage sitting on drives, and they say, I don't even know where to start with this. I know I have a story. I don't know how to implement the steps to get the story out. And sometimes they call me with a rough cut, and they said, you know, it's flat and boring, and I hate it. How can I love my cut again? So we work on that. And in very few cases, people call me when they locked picture. They got a few festival rejection letters, or declination, as they call it, more politely. And they said, we thought we had a film. Apparently not. What can we reconsider? So it runs the gamut from one day they had an idea all the way to they locked picture. The bulk of the people come around the demo, because that makes them aware of story issues, and around first rough cut, I would say. Those are like 50% of people come in those major groups. and the rest of the people come everywhere in between. My work is the same. I do analysis that is interactive and cooperative. I don't tell them, oh, I think this, you should do that. It's not a unilateral session. It's I ask questions and they learn and think and make decisions. Somebody says, you are a decision-making facilitator, which I think is a good name, but a bit of a mouthful. But, yeah, I facilitate the decision-making process, and then I put together a plan so they can achieve, you know, the next step, and then I do several follow-ups to make sure that they get to their goal. So, you know, it's the method is the same. It's just that what we analyze, the object of analysis changes depending on the stage they're in. But, yeah, I would say one big part is the demo because it's a jolt of reality. It's reality check. A demo is dress rehearsal for the film, and main issues come up there. And I'm sure you get that through your grant. You know, people come with a demo, and they're very excited, and you've realized that maybe it's not representing the film the best way it could.
Exactly right. Well, the biggest problem I have is the beginning, usually.
Yes.
I find that filmmakers do not appreciate the importance of the first 10 seconds. That's when you have to engage me. I want to know where I am, and as soon as possible, what this is about or who is the main character. Because I'm the same as other judges around the world looking at material, and I have to look at one trailer after another after another. So you have to be quick, to the point, and something where I promised to watch 10 minutes, but I found myself 20 minutes later still watching a film because I couldn't stop.
Right. Yes, I think there are many reasons why this happens. First is people underestimate the psychological impact. That, yeah, it's not that we don't have extra 10 seconds. It's not that we value the book by the cover. Of course, we are aware at the conscious level, but the first few seconds sets up the stage of how I'm going to watch the rest. So even if I'm willing, or like you, who are very nice, to commit for 10 minutes, most people will commit 1 minute and that's it. If they don't get it, they stop and they go, not for me. But even if I say, I promise I will watch 10 minutes, how you're going to watch the 9 minutes 50 seconds after depends on the first 10 seconds. So it's not just a question of, oh, my God, well, people cannot spare a minute. It's not that. It's how do you prepare the viewer to watch what comes after. So that's something people underestimate. They think that, well, the topic is so interesting, they will watch it. No, it's also preparing your viewer to watch the rest. And why it happens. First, many filmmakers are in the cutting room for the first time with a project, and they can't wait to be in that situation because it's the creative part. So they give it way too much time, and they think they're cutting the film, so they give it the tone and pace of the actual film. So they put credits, slow shots, waiting for the people to sit down and get their popcorn, and they don't realize that that's not the audience. The audience that will watch a trailer are in their offices. They have a pile of trailers, as you said, and they have to make very harsh decisions in very short time. They're not just getting cozy with the film for an evening of movie watching. So I think the combination of not understanding the circumstances of their audience, which is industry, and at the same time being so eager and happy to be back editing and setting up the film, they set it up as an actual film and they forget that this is a working tool. And I said that in my book and I say it in every lecture. A demo, I know it feels like making the film, and it is making the film, but it's a working tool. It's something that you have to be able to change, discard. You cannot have any emotional attachment because it should bring money. It should bring contacts, audiences, open doors. It's not there. It's not the film. So that's why people underestimate, as you said, the first, I would say, 10 to 20 seconds. And the first thing that needs to be there absolutely is the premise, as you said. The premise must be there because that's what the industry person wants to know right away. What is this film about? Is it for me? And then I watch a little bit more to see if I agree with the style. And then as they like the film, they will wonder, can I work with this filmmaker? Is the budget right? Is the schedule right? But the first question is, what is it about and is it for me? and me is whoever the industry person is watching at the time. So, yeah, I would say that getting the first, if you get the first 10, 20 seconds right, a lot of things can be forgiven afterwards, a lot.
A lot. You're absolutely right. Well, let me say that in listening to what you just said, I totally agree with it. And but what I would love to know is what do you do to, with or for the person who comes in with 200 hours and says, where do I begin? What do I do? I know there's a film in there somewhere.
Yes. Well, many people I have longstanding relationships, either because of the first film or because they came already for the trailer or the synopsis and they want to revisit. And some people come directly at that stage where the 200 were sitting there all along and it's the first time I meet them. If that's the case, or the opposite, if I've been working with a person, we revisit certain things like premise, why they're making this film, who is the audience, what the goal is. But when they have the 200 hours of footage, I have developed a series of exercises that helps them dig for the main stuff. I have something called the then exercise, where they have to come up with a series of sentences that start with then. I invented that exercise 12 years ago. And at some moment, I thought, oh, this is silly. And then I wasn't doing a lot of story development because I felt it was kind of empty, especially if they haven't shot footage. And I said, what am I'm very squeamish about selling color glass, you know? Like, I want the work to be tangible. I want people to be able to say at the end of the session, I walk in with this and I walk out with this other thing. And with story development, it's hard to quantify, you know? Like, how can you show you're better off than before? So for some moment, I stopped doing story development, but people were, you know, begging and saying, no, please, what do you need? I'd say, do you want tangible? Okay, I'll give you a page of something. So they wanted to come up with things so it would feel tangible. I said, okay, maybe some people have a point here. So I resumed the use of this then exercise, and I perfected it with color coding and with different columns when they need to address things. And it became a hit. People love it. They know it's hard, but they'd rather put the hard work off the edit suite than during the time they're paying an editor, $2,000 a week or $3,000 a week. So then exercise is an instrumental part of organizing the material after we identify the premise. And then I have other exercises. Some are image. You know, I evaluate if the person is more visual or it's easier for them to write. So I adapt the work to their tendencies. You know, if they're more visual people and they hate writing, I try to give them exercises that are more geared toward choosing key images, etc. So I worked recently with somebody in Vermont who had this situation. She had lots of rallies. It was a political film, lots of archival, and we went through several installments of the then exercise, and after three sessions she had a script and she's now editing. So,
oh, how wonderful.
Yeah, I was a bit distrustful of this little then exercise. I said, what was I thinking when I came up with that? But then people pushed me to keep working with it, and now it became a very thorough exercise. And I can attest, again, I'm very much about results, and I can attest. I have three good case studies where I can say they came with footage and no idea, and they woke up with a script, and they are in post-production now. So yeah, the then exercise is something I didn't give it credit, but over time, over the years, I realized it was a good tool.
How fantastic. Well, tell us what types of stories are favored today, Fernanda.
Yeah, that's quicksand. One may think, okay, this is what's working today, and then by the time you finish the film, it changed. So it's good to be aware of what are the market forces shaping the business, but also know that there are rule breakers that will impose new ways of seeing things. And so, you know, we have to be flexible. I think there is no doubt that there is an interest in world social issues in terms of content. That's clearly a strong tendency. The quirky film does happen, but it's rare, and it better have very good structure to go through the gatekeepers. So the social issue that in more cynic New York circles is called the babies with fly type of film, because there are always some poor child suffering. And again, that's for the cynic of us in here in New York. But, you know, the social issue is big everywhere. People want to be involved. It's interesting because I immigrated to the States in the mid-90s. When it was all about personal films and the personal journey. And then after 9/11, it seems that the States open to the world, and now the world film with subtitles is not a problem. It used to be a problem to have a film about something remote and unique. But the social issue is big today, not the only thing, but big. In terms of how to present the film, obviously character-driven, more than it used to. Documentaries were very topic-driven, and it was accepted to have, you know, the voice of God narrating it. The voice of God was a white male in his 50s that will, you know, tell you what you were supposed to understand from the film. That was, you know, many decades ago. And today, you know, we want the characters to lead the story. Now, I'm sure that will make a lot of people nervous because they are not following a character, and it is very political or social or topic, and what to do. Well, there are ways to make some interviewees stars of the film. I think what's important is to have a grounding element, something that people can follow throughout the film, whether it's the filmmaker or the voice of the filmmaker or a key person, even if that person is not technically a character. So those are the characteristics. And there are exceptions across the board, you know, and there is always somebody who proves everybody else wrong. So I don't walk in shaping films to fit a market. I walk in hoping to be surprised. I always tell filmmakers, this is what the market seems to want, but I want you to prove everybody wrong. So I encourage people to follow their own vision, but aware of what they are up against.
Yes.
Well, Fernanda, I have a question that I was wondering about, too, and that is, can you really summarize a story for a potential buyer with a 50-word long line and or a 3-minute trailer?
Yeah, isn't that the ultimate injustice? How can you? You're out to shoot for 5 years, 150 hours of footage, a 90-minute film with, you know, DVD extras, and you're supposed to convey all of this in 50 words. It can be done. I do it every single day. I work with people over Skype all over the world, and everybody complains they have to do it. And once I show them a process to do it in a way that actually creates enthusiasm for the film, then they go, oh, yeah, that's what my film is about. And they become encouraged, and actually they feel a sense of relief that it's a great mental exercise. When you can summarize your film in your head, it seems much more feasible than when it's this massive thing you cannot explain in less than an hour. So I think a logline should be a friend. It should the same for the 3-minute trailer. What an injustice. You shoot this wonderful stuff, and then you have to choose only 3 minutes. But once people go through the process, and it can be done, again, I'm 12-year testament of it, once it's done, filmmakers are relieved. They go, oh, thank God the film is this manageable. If I convey this much, I'm good, and I achieve my goal. So as you can see from all my answers, I don't address things at the face value level. It's not just logline trailer. It's what are the implications in the business for the person, psychologically, financially. Like, all these things have to be seen bigger than they are because, yes, it's a pain in the neck to spend a day trying to figure out the 50 words that you will put in that little line in the grant proposal or in the brochure or in the festival catalog. But the benefit of doing it is not just complying with rules or selling the film. The benefits are for the filmmaker, him or herself, because it makes even people who don't ask for a log line, I push them to come up with one, because it's much easier to walk into the edit room, whether it's for the trailer or for the film, when you have that long leg in your head, because it makes the project feasible. It's, okay, I need to convey this, and if I do that, I'm done. While if you walk into a cutting room with, I don't know, my film is about, let me tell you, and then you have to sit down and talk for an hour, it makes the process seem daunting. So Yes, it's terrible to the first moment when you have to come up with it. But then, again, I have exercises and a process that is very gentle. So people don't feel we're butchering the project. They feel, oh, okay, this is doable. And they do the exercises almost in an innocent way without knowing that at the end of the exercise they will have what they were asking for. But, yeah, I would say I was one of those filmmakers back in the day where I'd say, what? You want 50 words? I would get so mad. I felt it was an insult. But now I see the benefit of it.
Well, Fernanda, that was one of the things you said in the first class that has stayed with me 12 years. That was, you said, put the essence or your log line in front of you on one card, stick it on top of your computer, and as you were looking at scenes, does it fit? Yes, put it in. No.
Oh, I still use that. Yeah. Oh, wow, what a memory. Yes. I call it the value card. The value card is a bit of a log line, but phrased in broader terms, not with the idea of selling, but more with the idea of what's my main focus. So, yeah, the value card has the value expressing the film in if-then terms. If you do what you love, money will follow, or if we accept others, we can accept, you know, whatever the value is in the filmmaker and the film have in common. And, yeah, from there we get the log line. And value and log line go up there in the edit room or at the front of your script or folder. And I ask people, when you lose your bearings, go back there. Does it fit or it doesn't? Because some people say, I don't know what to do with all this material. I said, very easy. Does it serve the value or it doesn't serve the value? And people say, I said yes to everything. Well, if it serves the value all the time, then what part of the value? The first part, the second, the middle, and to what degree? So when people insist that everything they shot or everything they wrote serves the value, I push them harder to choose, okay, what part of the value and how important is that part of the value and how much? So they say, okay, these scenes represent my values or my value 100%, and this 50, and this 20. So there are ways of categorizing. But, yeah, those were one of the first tools I developed, and I still use it. It's essential. It's essential. I think in the end when people get lost is because they didn't lose passion, they lost perspective. And these tools are good for gaining perspective.
Exactly. Well done. Well, we don't have much time left, but now we have a whole new trailer concept, and that is in crowdfunding. So what do you suggest they do about a crowdfunding trailer? Anything you can tell us in a minute or two?
Yes, I can tell you that definitely put yourself presenting the teaser, that it should be 1.5, 2 minute tops, and that it's a little bit more lax in rules, that you can go for a little bit more flashy flair, marketing flavor than a strictly fundraising trailer. So with a crowdfunding trailer, introduce it yourself, 1 minute, two tops, and have fun with it, because the audience will be much more flexible than the strictly industry professionals that we deal with.
Great, great. Anything else you'd like to tell filmmakers about you or your services?
Well, in this economy where we are all leveled by the internet, people have to be savvy, choose wisely. Not everybody needs a story consultant. I hope nobody will need a story consultant at one point, because it means we have evolved storytelling-wise to the point that I'm not needed. That would be a wonderful day. And just to choose carefully, because who you get around your project affects the karma of your project, affects the life of your project. So, you know, the same way people spend hours choosing an iPod or a director of photography, they should spend enough time checking the background of those they're going to work with, because it will have an impact on their psyche, on their personality, on their project, on their finances. So I tell people, just because we're all on the internet doesn't mean we're all the same. Choose wisely.
Exactly. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Fernanda.
Oh, Carol, thank you for having me.
You're so good to our filmmakers and the people that apply for the grant. They all say, oh, my gosh, I see you have Fernanda on there.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I love doing it. I love what I do. I do it every day of my life. It's my main focus. This is not a side gig for me. So I'm glad when people see how much heart and soul I put in it.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yes, so happy to have you. You can reach Fernanda through her website at documentarydoctor.com and her book trailer, Trailer Mechanics, How to Make Your Documentary Demo a Second Edition, is also available at documentarydoctor.com. Carol and I want to thank you for tuning in to The Art of Film Funding. Please visit our website at fromtheheartproductions.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good luck with your films, everyone.